feel like Kobe in a fourth quarter.
This is the Day More NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. Coming at you Tuesday night after the Timberwolves 127-97 loss to the Brooklyn Nets. It was the normal pattern of a game that Karl Anthony Towns doesn't play in for the Timberwolves. You know, step one, Timberwolves fall down by 50. Somehow that's barely an exaggeration. They got down by as many as 45 today. So check that box. Step two, make a roaring garbage time comeback. They did that. They cut it down under 30 in the fourth quarter. Check. And then step three, Anthony Edwards says something cute post-game. And yes, that happened. Check. If you somehow didn't hear this one, it was an all-timer from Ant.
And we haven't gotten to chat with you since the news this weekend that Alex Rodriguez was getting ready to buy in as an owner here. Do you have any thoughts about him? Are you an A-Rod fan at all growing up or anything like that? What do you think about what he might bring to the team?
A fan? What do you mean? Like, who is he?
The baseball player, Alex Rodriguez?
Yeah, no, I don't know what it
is. Okay.
I know he's going to be the owner, but I don't know nothing about baseball.
Edwards also went on to say that, quote, they got their ass kicked, and also this quote, I think we just played bad. The answer to why the Timberwolves played bad today, again, is the same answer for every other game the Timberwolves play bad. Karl Anthony Towns didn't play. Now, sometimes the Timberwolves play poorly when Cat does play, but what they always do is play poorly when Cat does not play. It's been 19 games now since the All-Star break, and in those 19 games, the Wolves have actually outscored their opponents by 7 points in the 656 minutes that Cat has been on the floor. In the 261 minutes he has been off the floor, they've been outscored by 102 points. That's insane. I mean, for those of you who speak net rating, that's a net rating of minus 18.4 points per 100 possessions. Insanely bad. And that's not a small sample. 19 games. Again, that's more than a quarter of the season. And really, it's most noticeable when you go through player by player and look at what they do when they're next to Cat versus what they do when they're not next to Cat. I mean, this team does not have players who can sustain with Cat off the floor. I mean, check these out. The most glaring one is Cat and D'Lo. The Wolves' net rating with Cat and D'Lo both on the floor together this season is plus 7.1. When it's just D'Lo, no Cat, minus 19.0, a 26.1 point swing there. I mean, they have had a scorching offense this season when those two have been on the floor together, an offensive rating of 123. And since D'Lo has returned from injury, the offensive rating with Cat and D'Lo on the floor is 132. But D'Lo with Cat off the floor this season, he has an offensive rating of 104. The same thing goes for Cat with Beasley. Cat and Beasley together on the year, they have a positive net rating of plus 1.9. Beasley in his minutes without Cat, minus 13.4. And the Wolves, again, are awesome offensively when Cat and Beasley are out there together. They have made 41%. The Wolves as a team have made 41% of their three-point shots this season in the 447 minutes Cat and Beasley have shared the floor together. When Cat has been off the floor this season, the Wolves have only made 32% of the threes in 1,480 minutes. 32%. Massive swing. With Cat and Edwards on the floor together, their net rating is negative, but only minus 2.0. And when Edwards is out there by himself, no Cat, it's minus 13.7. The Wolves' offense has been awful in the minutes that Ant is on the floor without Cat. Offensive rating of 103.5. Again, same thing for Rubio. Cat and Rubio, net rating of minus 0.1 or minus 1 point. And when it's just Rubio, it's minus 11.6. The Wolves have been outscored by 183 points this season when Rubio is on the floor without Cat. But the most interesting one, I think, because it's only a recent development, is the Cat and Naz Reid minutes. And I want to focus a little bit on that one tonight. Part of wanting to focus on that is because, you know, as much as I like Naz as a prospect, we're beginning to see that in the minutes when Naz is out there by himself, like tonight, that the Wolves aren't very effective. I mean, Naz got the chance to start tonight, and it was awful. I mean, Naz shot 1 of 7 from the field, and the Wolves were They were outscored by 22 points in the 16 minutes that Nas played. But at the same time, Nas has been awesome when he shared the floor with Kat recently. After only sharing the floor, they only shared the floor together for 5 minutes when Ryan Saunders was the coach. 5 minutes. Now, Kat and Nas, over this most recent stretch, they've been averaging about 10 minutes together on the floor per night. I asked Chris Finch about that pairing after, this was after the win against Chicago on Sunday.
Hey, Chris, you went with a lot of Nas next to Carl tonight. I'm curious how much of that was just about Chicago's big front court versus just wanting to see that pairing out there more. And how would you kind of assess those two sharing the floor together over this past month or so?
Well, we love it. I mean, we just are always looking for opportunities to get to it. You know, I've said this before, we should probably get to it a little bit more proactively at times. And sometimes, like, the second units that you see a lot in the NBA are really small. I mean, they're basically playing with, like, wings and guards and maybe one big. So sometimes it's difficult to get to it there. You know, tonight was an easy, obvious matchup for it. And we, you know, we wanted to, like we've talked about it before, wanted to try to get to it more. But then Jaden's played well. Wancho's played really well. So we have some depth of guys also giving us some quality minutes right in that position. So what I love is the flexibility. But that lineup has been very productive to us and for us. And we can need to find ways to get to it more creatively.
The numbers with that lineup have been awesome recently. I mean, over the past five games, the Wolves have a net rating of plus 18.2 with Kat on the floor. Kat and Nas on the floor together. That's in almost 90 minutes. I mean, in almost 90 minutes since the All-Star break, those numbers hold up. They're even bigger. I mean, it's a plus 15.5 net rating over 18 games. That's big. I mean, the Wolves shoot the shit out of the ball when Kat and Nas are on the floor together. They've, since the All-Star break, when Kat and Nas are on the floor, not just Kat and Nas, but all the guys on the floor, because of the spacing, they have made 44% of their threes, 44% of 68 three-point attempts in those minutes that Kat and Nas are on the floor together. The spacing has been massive, and it's led to a really good offense when they go Kat and Nas big in the front court. But, weirdly, the most encouraging part might be the defense. It's worked really well with Kat and Nas on together. Their defensive rating in those minutes since the All-Star break is 100.5. Obviously, the sample isn't that big. It's just 88 minutes. But to put that defensive rating of 100.5 in context, I mean, that's 5 points per 100 possessions better than the Lakers' defensive rating this season of 105.5. And the Lakers are far and away the best defense in the NBA. I just think we've now officially crossed the bridge into the point where those two obviously need to be sharing the floor together nightly. I mean, I'd like to see Finch try and force teams to match up to that size. As he referenced in the clip there, I mean, he's a little wary to play that big pairing against smaller front courts. But I think it's maybe time to, you know, to make those small front courts of other teams adjust to the Wolves' bigger front court, right? Force their hand. Another big part of this is the fact that the Wolves, like I said, they just haven't been good this year when Nas is out there without Kat. You know, and part of that is, you know, playing with the second unit and other, you know, other things. But, I mean, the defense has been bad. Remember that 100.5 defensive rating and Kat and Nas on together since the All-Star break. Well, when Nas has been out there without Kat this season, his defensive rating is 116. Now, again, that's a theme with a lot of the guys on the team, but as we think beyond this year and ahead, you know, to more competitive seasons down the road, I think we also have to wonder about the feasibility of Nas being the backup center for Kat. If the Wolves want to compete next year, I mean, I think it's an open question of whether or not they can rely on Nas to capably play the 15 minutes a night when Kat is off the floor. It hasn't worked this year. I mean, it seems like a small problem. It's like, oh, it's the backup center, only 15 minutes a night. But over the course of the year, that adds up. I still think Gerson Rosas has to ask himself next season if he wants to address the backup center position. You know, Nas has been a good development story, and I think he's a piece. But all of Nas's positive development has come on these awful teams where, in the aggregate, the Wolves are losing in Nas's minutes. I mean, we've talked a good amount over the past few podcasts about how this team might benefit from a true rim-protecting center. I think it would, you know, if it was just at backup center, it would make some sense if the team went out and signed someone like a Nerlens Noel this summer. You know, if that happens, then you're kind of left with Nas if you want to, you know, keep playing him, keep developing him. I mean, if you're going to have another backup center, which there's an argument, you kind of have to then play Nas next to Cat. Again, I think it's a crossroads that Rosa is he's gonna need to take on this summer. And this recent data, this last month or so of this time with those two out there together, I think it should really factor into the equation. Ever said to yourself, I love the fact that I've had the same pair of sheets since just after college and I've never liked them, but I keep washing them every week and putting them back on the bed just like it's totally normal? Well, stop it. Brooklinen can make that voice in your head and the bad sheets on your bed go away. Brooklinen was started by Rich and Vicky, who also tried to boost their home essentials in a way that didn't cost them an arm and a leg. And when they couldn't, they founded Brooklinen, which is the first direct-to-consumer bedding company. They work directly with manufacturers to make luxury available directly to you without luxury-level markups. Brooklinen has a variety of sheets, colors, patterns, and materials to fit your needs and tastes. Brooklinen has over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting. They're so confident you will love their products that they even have a 365-day money-back guarantee. And Brooklinen is also so much more than sheets. They've got comforters, they got pillows, towels, loungewear, more. So go to brooklinen.com and use promo code MORE, my last name, M-O-O-R-E, to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more. Plus, you get free shipping. That's brooklinen, brooklinen.com, and enter promo code MORE to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more and free shipping. brooklinen.com and use promo code MORE at checkout. After tonight's game, Chris Finch spoke post-game about how tomorrow can be better because today is now out of the way. I mean, very clearly the Timberwolves were discombobulated today. I mean, the recent events in Brooklyn Center, they obviously took a distracting toll on a lot of the players on this roster. We'll get to that in a second. But I think also the 3 p.m. start time messed with them. And you know, that's going to be the same thing tomorrow when the Wolves play the Bucks. It's a 3:30 start time. I think it's an interesting thing because for a lot of us who aren't on the life schedule of playing professional basketball every other day at 7 p.m., I don't think we fully grasp the impact of that schedule shift. And it was interesting to hear Josh Okogie talk after the game about his words, how that, you know, it fucked him up.
Hey, Josh, Gerson was talking about this a little bit earlier, too, but what's it like to be in the middle of a situation like this with all of the emotions and everything swirling around in the community and then still having to go to the game, like how everything just doesn't seem to stop and you have to keep pressing forward? I mean, is it difficult to summon the focus and things to do this and try and get out here and do your job while your heart and your head is probably somewhere else?
Very difficult. I mean, as an athlete, you know, we're so used to compartmentalizing. You know, everybody's always going through stuff off the court, whether it be, you know, family issues, whether it may be even good things going on. You have to learn how to, like, take all that out and focus on the court. But when it's, like, things like that, it's just even harder, you know, because it affects so many things. Like, we couldn't have fans in the building. We have to play at 3:00. We have to, you know, and I don't know. I mean, Rebecca may know a little something about this, but, you know, when you used to playing at 7, then you throw a game at 3:00, it fucks up your whole schedule. You know, 3:00 is when I'm sleeping, you know what I'm saying? And my body is used to doing that on game days, eat breakfast, play my game a little bit, watch some TV, and I go to sleep for about 2 hours, and then I'm ready to play. So when I have to wake up, you know, go test, come back. Now it's like, you know, we have walkthrough at 12. It's like, where is that nap time? You know, then you go through your walkthrough, then you go through your shooting times and everything. And it's like your body is like, oh, it's sleep time, but it's actually time to play. So, I mean, and it all stems from what happened yesterday. So it's just like a domino effect, and nothing good ever comes out of it.
Obviously, there's no excuse for falling down by 45 points in a game, you know. I think even if they pulled an all-nighter the night before a game, you know, the game still should have been closer. Brooklyn had to deal with the same thing. But I do think it's fair to say that the start time was a factor for why it was as bad in terms of result tonight. From listening to Josh, though, I do think the biggest factor that contributed, again, to the Wolves' discombobulation was that for a lot of these guys, you know, Josh in particular, you know, their heads were elsewhere. And you know, as myself, as a white person, I don't think I can effectively apply context to that. But I can play for you what Josh had to say and, you know, just tell you that I have a lot of respect for Josh. I've always liked what he's about, and I particularly had a lot of respect for how he spoke today from his heart. So here's an extended clip of what Josh Okogie had to say after the game about what he's going through.
Do you have any plans to... You know, I know this isn't the opportunity to be out and protesting and things like that, but do you have any plans to use your platform very strongly right now?
I always do. You know, God's given me the gift, you know, to be in the position I am to influence others. So if I can get as much truth out there, you know, I always do that, especially at a time like this. You know, every time something like this happens, it just brings me back to, I don't know when, but it was like a year ago on Netflix, there's this stand-up Chris Rock does called Tambourine. And he says, he was obviously joking because he's the comedian, but obviously there's a lot of truth to it. He was saying, you know, some jobs, you know, just can't have, you know, bad apples. Because every time something like this happens, you know, I see the everybody says, you know, there's a lot of good police out there who just have some bad apples. And every time that I see that, I think about, you know, that script where Chris Rock wrote, and it kind of went like this. So say, you know, I'm starting an airline business, you know, JO Airlines, come fly with JO Airlines. And I say, okay, look, all of our pilots are pretty good, but we have a few bad apples. Would you buy a ticket to JO Airlines? Probably not, right? Nah, I wouldn't buy a ticket to my own airline. If you know, if that was the kind of stigma going around. Same thing with like hospitals. Like if I was going to a hospital, I needed, you know, somebody needed an implant or something or a procedure done. And they say, look, most of our doctors are good, but we have some bad apples in the hospital. Nobody would go to that hospital. Because it's just some jobs where you can't have bad apples, especially when it's people's, you know, livelihood that's at stake. So I think, you know, the police industry is the same thing. You can't have bad apples, you know. And I'm not here to say that, you know, obviously Dante Wright, whether he was right or wrong in that situation, he shouldn't have to pay the price of life or death for that. Like, you know, it's been so many situations where I've been wrong, you know, but I shouldn't have to die. I shouldn't have to be at the hands of a police officer, whether somebody lives or not. Like, we played today, we lost. I probably ran 5 plays wrong today. I shouldn't be killed for it. You know what I'm saying? The other team probably did something wrong today. They shouldn't be killed for it. Like, and it just hurts because it's like all of this just could have been prevented. Like, you know, doing my research, like, so in 2020, there's about 45 police officers who've been killed by gunfire. And there's been since from the beginning of from January till about December 8th, it's been over 1,000 police officers who've killed, you know, civilians. And when you take into account there was a whole pandemic where it wasn't even a lot going on last year, that's a kind of high number. And about 30%, 28 to 30% of those thousands of people were Black. And so you're saying probably like about 300 plus people, Black people were killed by police officers last year. And we're about 13% of the U.S. population. So that's entirely too much. And there's definitely a problem. And we have to hold people accountable, like for real though. You know, it's just a saying. I don't want this just to go where it's like, okay, it's just another episode. Oh yeah, we're going to say let's hold people accountable. And we're just going to wait till, you know, this dies down and then everybody's going to forget about it. We have to just keep having this conversation because it's happening too frequent that a young 20-year-old kid gets killed not too far from where they're having a trial for another black man getting killed. Like that shouldn't happen. Like it shouldn't be that frequent where somebody gets killed through the same thing that somebody else is being on trial for doing. Like that just doesn't make any sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I know she, officer said she thought it was a taser, but even that just shows you how like subconsciously, you know, when they see a black kid or anything, it's just, they're automatically a threat because you have your handgun to the right and your taser is supposed to be to your left. You have to cross your body to get your taser. So you should know, you know, where your taser is and you should know where your gun is. And if you're going to arrest a kid, the training also states you want to make arrest near the trunk of the car so that that person you're arresting doesn't really have that space to get back into a car to drive away. And if the person was to drive away, there's also a rule stating you don't replace cardio for gunfire. So meaning if somebody takes off running, you don't say, because I have to chase them, I can use my gun. That's not the case in the line of duty. And I've done my research. So I know that even regardless of what, you know, Dante did in that situation, it shouldn't have been, you know, a situation where he's dead right now. You know, worst case scenario, you let him go, you got his tag. Obviously, you looked him up. You have his information to know that there was even a warrant out for his arrest. So you can go get him. You know, obviously, I know the address is stated there where he lives. You can find him even if he gets away. That's your police. That's the police's job. It's the police. But it's just so sad. It's really so sad. And it's even heartbreaking that it's happening in the community that, you know, obviously that I'm playing in, because it could be anybody. I'm not far removed from it. You know, I have a family. I have a little brother, older brothers, older sister. They're not far removed from it. And it's just sickening. It's sad. It's disgusting. And it just has to stop.
It does have to stop. I mean, not all jobs can have bad apples. We've got to be better. Minnesota has got to be better. We can be better. I know that. Let's do it. That's all I have for you tonight. The Wolves and Bucks are back at it Wednesday afternoon, and I will be back to talk to you then. Be safe. Until then, I am Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah.